You're listening to a Toad Network production, putting heroes on trial because someone has to.
This is Sono.
And I am Amit, and you are listening to Moonspeak. I'm a magical girl rookie, and Sono is a vet, so prepare yourself to be enchanted as we delve deep into each act. And this episode, we're discussing Sailor Moon Crystal Episode 9, Princess Serenity. Or was it just Serenity?
It may have been Serenity Princess, actually.
Ah, okay.
Crystal has a kind of weird naming scheme going on.
Yeah, it does. There's multiple names, and it's, I don't know. It's weird. Anyway, please remember, everybody listening, to support the official releases of the show so that we can keep getting more of this, especially now because this is fantastic and amazing, and I need more, and I'm going to be very upset if we don't get more.
Yes. Come on, guys. We've got, I think, maybe, after what we're getting in Crystal, we have maybe two or three story arcs still to get through, so come on.
Are they around the same length?
Yeah, they should be. I think they're all around the same length. I think they're all around 13 chapters.
Okay.
Doing the quick math in my head.
Okay. That'd be cool even if it was one a year for the next, you know, continuing this year and then 2 years after. That'd be nice, I think. I mean, having it all at once would be great, but definitely stretching it out would be fine too. So I know there are budget constraints.
Yeah, especially since they're releasing this entirely over the web. There's no TV airing, I don't think.
Right. Okay, well, let's jump into the episode then. My first note is Usagi's love for Mamoru breaks the seal on the legendary silver crystal and her memories, which I was not expecting it to work out like that. I thought it'd be more of a quest for a MacGuffin at some point, but it was right there all along, so...
Yeah, can you see why I was having such a hard time not saying things last week?
Yeah, definitely.
We've had this kind of double red herring situation where we kind of played up Usagi as being the princess, but then sort of red herringed that into, oh, nope, it's Minako, and then only double back on, oh, nope, you were right the first time, it was really Usagi. Because clearly it's Usagi. Doing this over the course of two episodes feels really rushed to me. And I know we're following the manga chapter by chapter, and the first series did it over the course of the same three episodes, so this is just kind of the natural progression. But I do wish there was a lot more time kind of devoted to bringing this out and to kind of believing that Sailor V was Serenity. But I guess, and from here, we're kind of moving from into this backstory and then to the end game. And I feel like we've kind of haven't had the time to get attached to everyone, kind of the way we did in the first series, because it was stretched out so much further.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting point that you bring up. And I was actually thinking about this earlier today that I got a good introduction and sense for all the girls, and there was a little bit of interplay between them. For a while, but then kind of the last three episodes really have almost been back to back, and there hasn't been much breathing room, like narratively. I know it's taken place over at least a couple days and like I think a week or maybe a few days spans, you know, after Mamoru's abducted, but it feels really, really tight, and I think that is a slight weakness, but still I think everything, Takeuchi played everything like just well enough to make it passable. Make it really strong.
You don't really notice until after you've watched it. Because you kind of get caught up in everything that's going on while you're watching it, and then kind of looking back, like, we really haven't had this time with them. And I feel like a lot of what Crystal is hanging on is that a lot of old fans are coming in and kind of already have the nostalgia for everyone, where they can kind of get away with this.
Yeah, but I will say, at least for me, it was fairly effective sleight of hand that Takeuchi pulled, but, you know, like I said, I did notice it afterwards, so. So then, you know, the Legendary Silver Crystal is unsealed, and so are Usagi's memories and the memories of the other girls as well. So
yeah,
that was interesting.
Except for Minako.
Right.
Minako had already awoken to everything long before Usagi met Luna and this story began, and I remember this is sort of what I wanted to talk more about, because Minako is the actual leader of the inner group, barring Usagi, who clearly outranks her being the princess. But in the Silver Millennium, when it was just the four of them, it was Venus who was the leader, and we've seen Minako carrying a lot of that. Like, she wanted to take care of everything herself in the past couple of episodes, because she's in charge here. She's kind of supposed to be taking care of everyone. So she kind of wants to pull them back from it, let them live their normal lives, that she's kind of being denied as being Venus. But she's very willing to take kind of the full weight of her responsibilities so that everyone else doesn't have to risk themselves. And this is a side of Minako that was present before, but wasn't quite as easy to see if you weren't looking for it. And I'm glad to see a lot more emphasis on it here. But I kind of miss the other side of Minako, the more Minako side instead of the more Venus side, where she wants to be a pop star and goof off and is kind of just as much of a slacker as Usagi.
See, now that's interesting because the I think part of our episode that we recorded, or you know, our previous episode that got garbled, we were talking about how. I was talking about how she seems like gentle and strong, and that was something you said to keep an eye on. And hearing you describe like the kind of self-sacrificing position she took, that she would try to carry all the burden herself so that the others didn't have to. I mean, that's one manifestation of it, and I'll be interested to see that further fleshed out in future episodes.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious to see how Minako specifically is going to be in later episodes, kind of as we go into this conflict, and then once we go into the second arc, because so far we haven't seen Minako at all. We've only seen Venus. So I'm curious to see when and how we're going to get introduced to kind of her civilian personality.
Okay. So then, let's see, Mamoru is taken by Kunzite and Queen Beryl, which I mentioned earlier, after they see the light of the legendary silver crystal enter his body and possibly, mistakenly believe that he has its power now, despite the fact that Usagi still has the tangible crystal. So like, I'm confused about, what Beryl and Kunzite did and did not see happen with Mamoru, but Usagi's mention of the legendary silver crystal not glowing or shining makes me wonder if she somehow did transfer its powers into him, and they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm not sure they fully know what they're doing, given that the physical legendary silver crystal is kind of small, at least as we have it right now.
Right.
And they were kind of a decent distance from what was actually happening. They were at least a couple yards away, so they didn't have a real good look. It's possible they thought that she just put the crystal directly into his body, since Kunzite seems to be searching for the physical object in him.
Right.
Instead of, like, some kind of weird power level. And they obviously care more about the crystal itself than Usagi or the girls, so they're probably more focused on that than what exactly Usagi was doing. Since we're mentioning the legendary silver crystal, we've talked in one episode about parallels between Sailor Moon and Kamen Rider Wizard.
Yeah.
And Usagi gaining, unsealing the legendary silver crystal is exactly how Haruto gained Infinity. It was the exact same scene, and that was all I could think about watching that episode of Wizard.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember, I remember kind of the context of it, but I don't remember anything else that happens in the episode other than going, did he just seriously silver crystal himself his final form?
That's really funny, especially because it did have to do with someone who he was close to, and he was trying to protect, I can't remember her name right now.
Koyomi?
Koyuki's daughter. Yeah, Koyomi.
Yeah, Koyomi. It was that, and I'm like, this is literally the exact same scene. This cannot be a coincidence.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. There's no way it's possible that it was coincidence.
I should look up the writers for that episode, do a little research there.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. Yeah, that's why this episode is going to be named. It's riffing on the song that says "Turn Your Tear into a Jewel." So anyway, that's kind of a fun thing. Okay, so moving on again. Awesome name of the big bad Queen Metalia. Man, that's a super cool name. Anyway, so she had fomented war against Princess Serenity and Silver Millennium by tainting the minds of humans and especially possessing someone who looks like Queen Beryl. And that woman struck and it seems killed Endymion, who I believe was the Prince of Earth's unified Earth Kingdom from long, long, long ago, who was defending Princess Serenity just as Mamoru was defending Usagi. So I like the parallel that they're drawing and like how strong it is, but then also it seeds information that, like, you know, Beryl is a kind of important figure because she's getting reincarnated too.
Yeah, no, that was Beryl. And I don't think this is actually a reincarnation of Beryl. I think that is the actual same woman.
Oh boy.
For reasons that Minako has been quietly alluding to, and I think will come. Actually, that I believe were alluded to in this episode with the four generals.
Hmm.
Talking about Mamoru.
Okay.
Which again, I'm a little impressed that they're bringing this up, because this was not addressed in the first series. I don't know why it was skipped over, and I'm still a little confused as to why they're not killing them all off, but, yeah, no, I do believe that's actually Beryl and not a reincarnation as it is with Mamoru and the girls. Because again, we didn't see that woman die.
Okay, that's a good point. All right, go ahead. Sorry, I'm all stepping off.
Man, Metalia's a jerk. remembering this backstory as it's happening. But Beryl, it was Beryl that she possessed, and you can kind of infer that Beryl kind of directly stepped into Endymion's role of, under Metalia's power, of kind of ruling the Earth after he was brought down. Because he was the leader of Earth and kind of what they had going on.
Right.
But yeah, Serenity and Endymion, his name is really hard for me to say, kind of basically parallel Usagi and Mamoru directly, which is why we get the conflict of past and present lives affecting one another.
Right, and I really like Romeo and Juliet. like, as much as anybody might want to criticize that, I just really enjoy it.
I do like the kind of the construct of it.
Yeah.
Though it's presented really weirdly here, in that it's just, nope, it's God's law that we, and it's just, wait, what God?
Right,
who,
well, Takeuchi.
Where, yeah, word of God.
Yeah, that is a little weird.
But I mean, it was always, I think, more that Serenity's mother was like, no, I said no, you can't do that, and she did it anyway because teenagers.
Right.
I'm curious to see how that specifically comes into play within the next episode. I'm so hyped for the next episode.
Oh, you know what? I stopped myself from watching the preview for the next episode, so I don't even know what's going on next week, or in 2 weeks. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch
I am very, kind of, everything that I've been building up to with me being excited about what's coming. That's next episode.
See, that's the weird thing, because, like, I can't believe that it gets better than this, because this is, like, the best it's been. At least narratively, like, the strongest. Anyway, I don't want to babble about how much I've been enjoying it, so I'll keep going. So the final scene where Usagi is struggling, I mean, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about, I love this, with the idea of retaining her identity despite now having these other memories, is really cool. The other supporting her and reminding her of her strength was such a lovely scene.
I was really emotional during this whole episode. I was 2 minutes in and I was already like at 90 miles an hour. But this scene was really, really great. Kind of especially Rei calling Usagi out and teasing her. Like, no, you're clearly not a princess. You're just Usagi. And that kind of felt like a really good show of the nature of their relationship and kind of the old feeling of their relationship that kind of knowing them brings. But I'm I am really a little disappointed we haven't done more to flesh out those relationships, really, within Crystal. It does a lot of telling and not showing sometimes. Not nearly as bad as other things. But it just really bothers me that we haven't seen those friendships develop when they're kind of at the core of what the show is. It was also kind of weird that we're not seeing a whole lot that really backs up their claims of your past life isn't you, you're you now. They don't really know much better than we do at the moment, so you could kind of chalk it up to that and them kind of wanting to believe there's a disconnect that may or may not actually be there. But we're seeing this really cyclical nature to Serenity and that cycle now repeating with Usagi. I mean, the big difference now is that Usagi has the power to fight back, which she didn't have as Serenity. Serenity was not Sailor Moon. So now Usagi has this extra power, but we're not really being shown anything to really support that claim, and that kind of bothered me looking back on the scene.
We raised a little bit about that before, but it definitely is a weakness. But in passing, it didn't really impact me, and I just loved the whole scene with her and the girls in the room, which is funny, because, you know, she's supposed to be not repeating the history, which I think you bring up. So I'll just move on to my next point. Going on to the frills of the episode, I gotta wonder, was there magical travel between Earth and the Moon? Because that was a little unclear.
That's never really been clear. Ever that I've been aware of. It's kind of mostly glossed over for the sake of moving the narrative forward. But we can kind of assume there was some magical way of going back and forth, and maybe Usagi was using the legendary silver crystal itself to either transport herself to Earth or Endymion to the Moon.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. It opens up the door to other questions, but, you know, we can leave those to another date. Usagi's body transforms a bit after her memories are unsealed. This is made quite clear when the other Sailor Guardians visit her sometime after Mamoru's abduction. This leads to an awesome scene in her bedroom that I was alluding to earlier, where her knights are acting as a personal court or entourage, hanging with her, cutting her hair, which had lengthened and was glowing, or at least had turned silver, which I'm a little unclear on that, but I thought that was really a neat scene.
Yeah, like I mentioned, I really did like this scene, and I like the construct of this scene. The symbolic act of them kind of cutting away Serenity from the longer hair, because the longer hair was symbolic of her becoming Serenity, where cutting it away back to her normal length is, no, you're Usagi. That we're going to make you comfortable as who you are, instead of who this weird, like, destiny fate thing tells you to be. And again, we kind of see Minako taking the lead in knowing exactly how to style Usagi's hair, which is something I'm sure Venus, as kind of the leader, helped Serenity with, and kind of leading everyone in comforting her. And again, this is where that sort of disconnect between the message and the reality sets in, because everyone kind of fell into these roles around Serenity that they would have had in the past, and they did for Usagi what they would have done for Serenity. So while they're doing their best to comfort her and be her friend and sort of help her calm down and believe that they're their own people, their past lives aren't really steering their fate now, and she's her own person, their actions don't really reinforce it.
Yeah, it's a little ironic. It's ironic. I don't feel as strongly about it, though. I wouldn't complain against it so much, because I feel like they're kind of paying back to Usagi all the kindness and gentleness that she's done to them in the past, and for that, I feel pretty good about it. I really enjoy, as much as I'm like, I like freedom and equality and stuff, I really am romanticized, romanced by, like, I know, that kind of imagery, like regal imagery and stuff. So it's just kind of maybe a personal bias of mine that I think it's cool. Anyway, I don't know.
don't know. I mean, I still think it was a great scene. I love kind of what the scene is supposed to emphasize. And it's a really, kind of a really great bonding moment for all of them. It's just kind of another case of, I wish we had more time to show everything between them instead of just being told about it.
Yeah, for sure. It would have been a lot stronger that way. Okay, so my next question, and this is going to lead to like a whole series of questions, so sorry, listener, just to warn you. What does Usagi's bodily transformation after her memories are unsealed mean? I never gave any thought to this sort of situation when it was in Yu-Gi-Oh!, where no one ever mentioned the transformation of Yugi to Yami with the Power of the Millennium Puzzle, but I think that these shows are on different levels, so I expect a little more here.
Yeah, well, with Yugi and Yami, I think that transformation was more of a visual metaphor for the audience. Sort of like Deno with the hair streaks and eye colors that no one in Deno ever actually acknowledges. Where in a visual medium, you kind of need that kind of icon to symbolize possession. Because otherwise, it's really hard to kind of know who's being possessed and when. Especially in animation, where you kind of have to change body language and facial expressions really drastically to get that point across. But with Usagi, the change in her body is a real physical thing that's happening that everyone is reacting to. This isn't Usagi being possessed by Serenity. They're the same person. This is kind of a reincarnation and not a possession, where it may be the legendary silver crystal, now that it's unsealed and active, is kind of trying to revert Usagi to Serenity and fit the soul that it knows back into the body that it knows. Where Serenity was sealed within Usagi with the legendary silver crystal, and now she's kind of unsealed that and herself and her potential and kind of her history, and her body changes to reflect that. I think it would have been really interesting if all of the girls changed to reflect this in some way, but it's also possible that because they're not directly tied to the crystal and its power, it wouldn't affect them so drastically that it would cause an actual physical change.
Okay, and I was just about to go into, well, why wouldn't they have changed? But I think the connection with the crystal that you bring up is a good, I don't know, hand wave for that sort of thing, because
yeah,
it's magic.
Their powers kind of all directly come from their own planets and sort of their own power source, instead of the crystal being tied directly to everyone's power.
Right.
So I think that can probably be a good reasoning for why they all don't change.
Okay, so here's a cultural, societal question with a lot of setup, so please humor me here. All right, so we briefly touched on the fact that when she has done her pen changes, as I call them, Usagi transforms into a different outfit, but also has a more shapely figure at times. When she breaks the seal on her memories, her hair and bust change, namely, they both grow. It seemed like a lot to me, almost to the point of distraction, but then I thought, what would a little girl be looking at here? And it didn't bother me. I was able to put on innocent lenses, I guess you could say, and just see the drama there for Usagi, and I feared for Mamoru. So, with all that being said, now here come my questions. Now, as a girl, when you first watched, was Usagi's bodily transformation as pronounced as it is here?
Actually, just go through all the questions, because I have one kind of big interconnected block of text.
Okay. All right. So the next question is it more about artistic expression of a, like, representing a change in her, or is it more literal? And then last question is the transformation about womanhood versus girlhood in some way? Do you feel that being buxom, if you can forgive the flightiness of that turn of phrase, is pushed forth as a sign of womanhood in a problematic way at all, if at all? I don't think any girl or woman should feel like that is the standard. Perhaps I should stop talking and let you answer now.
I think the biggest difference between the pen changes and this is that was all Usagi deciding to change herself. that was her putting on specific clothes and makeup and a costume and deciding how she wanted to look. That was all, she would become exactly who she wanted. This change into Serenity was not something she did willingly. Remember back in episode 4, she did change into a princess, and it was not nearly this drastic. It was what she imagined a princess to be, instead of Serenity, who is kind of a physical person that she's kind of forced to become. And I think the difference we're looking at pointing out here is between kind of a young woman trying to look more mature and a young woman actually physically maturing, which is usually kind of awkward and uncomfortable, which I'm pretty sure it's awkward and uncomfortable no matter what your gender is. But it's kind of a weird thing. And when I was a little girl watching this, I was 7, 8, in the 7 to 10 range, probably, thinking back on the years. I think it may, I wasn't really that aware of kind of the physical change in her. It may not have been quite as pronounced then as it is in Crystal. I would have to go back and kind of watch that scene again. But I don't really think it was, and I never really thought of it that way. That may be a product of the animation at the time, or it may be because I was 7 and I wasn't really aware of that kind of thing. But even up until now, I've never really thought of Usagi's transformation into Serenity as kind of any kind of metaphor for puberty or womanhood. I'm actually still, now that it's been brought up, kind of wary of seeing it that way, because it sounds like some kind of college literature class explanation. And I'm always kind of adverse to those because they seem really boring and forced. You can kind of play more with the girlhood versus womanhood card once we get to the outers, who are actually all older than the other girls, and kind of act as adults. But at this specific thing, I never felt it was that. And you can take it in that way, sure. I mean, the line is there, and you can draw it. But there's something, I think, to be said for more that she has been mentally maturing, and this is kind of the high point of that, which is always something that's resonated with me a lot more. The past few episodes leading up to this, we've seen her becoming more and more sure of herself, of her mission, and of what she wants. And we've seen her kind of realize that she's capable of deciding for herself, fighting for herself, doing what she can to protect people that she cares about. We've seen Usagi become less afraid. And if you think back to episode 1, all she did was cry through her first fight. And now she's running into battle head first, doing what she can to protect the people around her. And I think when I was a little girl watching it, I did pick up on that. Some of my strongest memories of the show are from when I was that age, watching the final battle between Usagi and Beryl. And honestly, I think all of the episodes leading up to that in the first series are really, really rough. I implore anyone not too familiar with Magical Girls, who has maybe come into the genre on Madoka, and view everything before that as all kind of sugar and rainbows, watch the first season of Sailor Moon. Watch everything leading up to the final fight with the final battle of the first season. It is rough, and it is painful. I really don't feel that Sailor Moon is kind of pushing the large bust equals woman, small bust not equal to woman at all. I've always felt it's been very inclusive of body types, even if it's kind of visually hard to tell because of Naoko's art style. But I guess this is, since I brought up Show Don't Tell, I should probably kind of stick with Show Don't Tell on that. To be honest, I didn't actually notice the change in Serenity's bust in this scene in Crystal. I noticed there was a change, but it didn't really come off to me what about her was changing physically. I did notice in all of the dream sequences that for some reason Serenity had, like, a very large chest. And I know a lot of people have made jokes about it. But, because in those shots, we're kind of focused on her torso to avoid her face in this sort of kind of weird, oh, we don't want you to know this is Usagi, but you know it's her. Because who else wears their hair like that?
Yeah.
But yeah, I knew her body had physically changed, but it didn't really occur to me what was changing. And I mean, body positivity is a huge issue in the world, and it's one I take pretty seriously, because of my own body image issues. And pushing some kind of standard is a deeply problematic thing that there is a huge problem with in media. And it's something I've spent a lot of time coping with over the years. And I think there's always kind of a space between not meaning to push an agenda and accidentally pushing it anyway. Naoko's art style for Sailor Moon was very thin, very willowy, and she drew everyone pretty much exactly with that one body type. I know the first series kind of did a little more to try and play with it. Possibly for the sake of looking more visually interesting, but they still all were kind of very thin and with the same body type, and that is kind of a problem. And I'm glad to see that now that 20 years later, we are seeing a lot of things, kind of display more types of people. But I don't think, as someone who grew up with Sailor Moon, being part of pretty much every phase of my life, I don't really think it ever had any negative impact on how I viewed myself. I never thought, like, oh, if I looked more like Rei, I would be prettier. I should try and look more like her. I was always kind of more taking away a lot of the friendship and a lot of kind of the fun antics to it. And again, I can't speak for every woman or even every woman who grew up with it as closely as I did. And some of them may be bothered by it. But the girls themselves have body image issues in a lot of episodes. And this is something more addressed in the first series, where we had more episodes between the major plot to flesh this out. And some of those episodes, having watched the first season a couple years ago, are kind of problematic. But I think still portraying that and bringing it up is important. And I do wish Crystal did more of that and kind of displayed them in more of the body types that Naoko had described them with, instead of just directly how she drew them.
Like saying that Makoto has the athletic build, right?
Yeah, and Usagi herself is described as being chubby.
Okay. Yeah, she's not
so
drawn that way.
So, like, I do... Yeah, Naoko, I don't think, really knew how to draw more than, like, three types of people. So she just kind of drew them how she knew how to draw them.
It's still very pretty, but...
Yeah, no, it's very pretty, but, I mean, this is kind of something that does need to be talked about, but I don't think it's all that bad. I think Sailor Moon does what it can to try and make every girl feel as strong and powerful as they can, regardless of who they are or what they look like. And again, there's a lot more to play with that once we get to the outers, the outer group, where we have even more different types of women coming into the cast.
Okay, well, that was, I hate to say it was a conversation, because it was pretty one-sided, but I think that was good to hear, and I'm glad that I asked the question, because I don't know, I was a little timid about asking it at first, but I think you said a lot of interesting things, and hopefully I enjoyed listening to it, so we'll see what the listeners...
Yeah, I hope everyone enjoyed my long ramble on this subject, but I do think it's one that people need to talk about. With that all out of the way, I am so hyped for the next episode. We got a very small glimpse of Queen Serenity, who I have talked about in previous episodes in regards to the opening. Let me tell you, I could not possibly be more excited. I apologize in advance, everyone, for how excited I'm going to be over the Silver Millennium episode.
Okay. I'm a little nervous knowing, or like, to find out what's going to happen. Is that what it's going to be called, Silver Millennium?
No, I think the next episode is just called
Ooh,
Moon.
Oh boy, well, that's ominous.
But I know we're getting a lot of kind of Silver Millennium backstory, some stuff on with Queen Serenity next episode. I really love Queen Serenity. I wish she kind of had a bigger place in the story, but...
Okay, well, I think on that note, that high note, we'll go ahead and wrap it up.
Yeah.
This has been Moonspeak, bi-monthly discussion and review of Sailor Moon Crystal. Visit trialofheroes.wordpress.com to see text reviews every Monday after Crystal airs and hear new Moonspeak the Monday after that. Moonspeak is part of the TOE network, where you can find articles and commentary on pop culture and genre fandom, including our flagship show, Uncommoncast RX. The opening and closing is a piano arrangement of the new Sailor Moon Crystal song, Moon Pride, played by Josh Agarado, whose work you can find at josh.agarado.net, and also on YouTube. There's a lot of cool work there, so go ahead and check it out if you like this song.